They reached out for the good things that lay at hand, and when they'd had their fill of food and drink, the lustrous one took up a new approach. "So then, royal son of Laertes, Odysseus, man of exploits, still eager to leave at once and hurry back to your own home, your beloved native land? Good luck to you, even so. Farewell. But if you only knew down deep what pains are fated to fill your cup before you reach that shore, you'd stay right here, reside in our house with me, and be immortal. Much as you long to see your wife, the one you pine for all your days, and yet I just might claim to be nothing less than she, neither in face nor figure. Hardly right, is it, for mortal women to rival immortal goddesses? How in build, in beauty? Ah, great goddess, worldly Odysseus answered. Don't be angry with me, please. All that you say is true. How well I know. Look at my wise Penelope. She falls far short of you, your beauty, stature. She is mortal after you. And you never age or die. Nevertheless, I long, I pine all my days to travel home and see the dawn of my return. And if a god will wreck me yet again on the wine-dark sea, I can bear that too, with a spirit tempered to endure. Much have I suffered, labored long and hard by now in the waves and wars. Add this to the total, bring the trial on. Even as he spoke, the sun set and the darkness swept the earth. And now, withdrawing into the cavern's deep recesses, long in each other's arms, they lost themselves in love. When young Dawn with her rose-red fingers shone once more, Odysseus quickly dressed himself in cloak and shirt, while the nymph slipped on a loose, glistening robe, filmy, a joy to the eye, and round her waist she ran a brocaded golden belt, and over her head a scarf to shield her brow, then turned to plan the great man's voyage home. She gave him a heavy bronze axe that fit his grip, both blades well honed, with a fine olive shaft lashed firm to its head. She gave him a polished smooth and adze as well. And then she led the way to the island's outer edge where trees grew tall. Alders, black poplars and firs that shot sky high, seasoned, drying for years, ideal for easy floating. Once she'd shown her guests where the tall timber stood, Calypso, the lustrous goddess, headed home again. He set to cutting trunks. The work was done in no time. 20 in all he felled. He trimmed them clean with his axe and split them deftly, trued them straight to the line. Meanwhile, the radiant goddess brought him drills. He bored through all his planks and wedged them snugly, knocking them home together, locked with pegs and bolts. Broad in the beam and bottom flat as a merchantman when a master shipwright turns out her hull. So broad the craft Odysseus made himself. Working away at speed, he put up half decks, pinned to close-set ribs, and a sweep of gunwales rounded off the sides. He fashioned the mast next and sank its yard in deep and added a steering oar to hold her right on course. Fenced astern to stern with twigs and wicker, bulwark against the sea surge, floored with heaps of brush. And lustrous Calypso came again, now with bolts of cloth to make the sail, and he finished that off too, expertly. braces, sheets and brails. He rigged all fast on board, then eased her down with levers into the sunlit sea. That was the fourth day, and all his work was done. On the fifth, the lovely goddess launched him from her island, once she had bathed and decked him out in fragrant clothes. And Calypso stowed two skins aboard. Dark wine in one, the larger one held water. Added a sack of rations filled with her choicest meats to build his strength, and summoned a wind to bear him onward, fair and warm. The wind lifting his spirits high, Royal Odysseus spread sail, gripping the tiller, seated astern, and now the master mariner steered his craft, sleep never closing his eyes, forever scanning the stars. Pleiades and the ploughman late to set, and the great bear that mankind also calls the wagon. She wheels on her axis always fixed, watching the hunter. And she alone is denied a plunge into the ocean's baths. Hers were the stars the lustrous goddess told him to keep hard to port as he cut across the sea. And 17 days he sailed, making headway well. On the 18th, shadowy mountain slowly loomed, Phaeacian's island reaching towards him now, over the misty breakers, rising like a shield. But now Poseidon, god of the earthquake, saw him, just returning home from his Ethiopian friends. From miles away on the Solymi mountain range, he spied Odysseus sailing down the sea. And it made his fury boil even more. He shook his head and rumbled to himself, "Outrageous! Look how the gods have changed their minds about Odysseus. While I was off with my Ethiopians. Just look at him, there, nearing Phaeacia's shores where he's fated to escape his noose of pain that's held him up until now. Still, my hopes ride high. I'll give that man his swamping fill of trouble." With that, he ran the clouds together, both hands clutching his trident, churned the waves into chaos, whipping all the gales from every quarter, shrouding over in thunderheads the earth and sea at once. And night swept down from the sky. East and south winds clashed, and the raging west and north sprung from the heavens, roiled heavy breakers up. And Odysseus's knees quaked. His spirit, too numb with fear, he spoke to his own great heart. "Wretched man, what becomes of me now at last?"